The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
13,000 workers in Minnesota plan a strike, but no strike for Teamsters at Anheuser-Busch. And today on the show, the president of the American Federation of Teachers and a retired CEO speaking out on the proposed buyout of U.S. Steel. Welcome to the Wednesday, March 13th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have two guests on the show today, and we're going to start things off with one powerful labor leader, Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers. We're talking about a union here with over 1.7 million members and growing, and I mean growing. Last year, they organized 83 new units, and in response, this is what Randy said, 2023 was a transition year for the American economy and for American workers who, despite ongoing hostility from employers and attacks on the right to organize from right-wing extremist governors and lawmakers, we continue to organize together in our workplaces, and we are making strides, incredible strides. She's going to talk about an organizing drive that just happened yesterday. We'll take a look at 2024. We'll look at politics, the difference between Biden and Trump. We're also going to talk about Women's History Month, which is the month that we're in right now, March being Women's History Month. And if you go to that homepage, aft.org, you can read all about the history of Women's History Month, which actually started, 44 years ago when Jimmy Carter was president. And they also profile on that homepage several women labor leaders like Dana Thompson Dorsey and Christine Engelbrecht. If you go to that homepage, you can check them out. So Randy Weingarten will be our first guest. Then we're going to check in with a newcomer. Bill Jones is his name. He's a retired CEO, worked for a company called Cummins America based in outside Chicago, Illinois. Since he retired, he's also a board member of a great organization that I check almost daily, the Coalition for a Prosperous America, prosperousamerica.org. And Bill authored a piece titled, Nippon Steel's U.S. Steel Corporation Offer Should Be Killed, and Here's Why. He does not like what's going on in America, especially with the steel industry. And over the years, Bill made a lot of friends, not just with CEOs, but with union leaders. He was very close to Leo Girard. In fact, he testified in Congress with Leo Girard about 20-some years ago, and he'll talk about that. And he points out that more than 50 members of Congress sent a letter to President Biden. This was in early January about this acquisition. And he said the letter suggests that, well, you know what? They can be easily persuaded by promises from Nippon that no union workers will be laid off if the deal goes through. But of course, Nippon Steel is going to promise not a single layoff. It just doesn't work that way. Bill points out that Nippon Steel right now has a total production capacity of 66 million tons. The company currently produces around 44 million tons a year. That means Nippon's full capacity is an extra 22 million tons over the 44 it produces now. With U.S. Steel producing about 25 million tons a year, I think we can eventually expect Nippon Steel to rationalize excess capacity and then lay off workers. So there's a history here, and I remember talking to Dave McCall about this. Dave is the current general president of the steelworkers, and he said, U.S. Steel, they're not a good player. They're very, very tough in contract negotiations. And when Nippon takes them over, if it happens, hopefully it won't, we're going to see a lot of layoffs in the steel industry, a lot of layoffs, which is pretty scary. Go to prosperousamerica.org. You could read more about that. So Bill Jones will be our second guest on the show. Now, brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You could find more at boydwatterson.com. Over 13,000 workers in the Twin Cities have voted to authorize coordinated strikes if unable to reach new contract agreements with their employers. Four unions, which represent janitors, security guards, teachers, and nursing home and public works employees, have voted to join the strike so far. Now, this news represents the culmination of a strategy that started about 10 years ago when SEIU Local 26 leaders began lining up the expiration dates for represented workers' contracts. Well, now, other unions with contracts expiring around the same time include LIUNA Local 363, the St. Paul Federation of Educators, SEIU Healthcare Minnesota and Iowa, and the Food and Commercial Workers Local 663. Well, they have all joined the original What Can We Win Together campaign. SEIU Local 26 lists the stated goals of the campaign as decent work, good schools, stable housing, and a livable planet. By the way, the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers is also a member of the campaign, but they have not authorized a strike, at least not yet. Meanwhile, Teamsters at Anheuser-Busch have voted by an overwhelming 86% margin to ratify a five-year agreement that raises pay, improves health care and retirement benefits, and protects all members' jobs. The new agreement rewards 5,000 Teamsters working at Anheuser-Busch breweries across the country. Got a comment here from Sean O'Brien, who's the general president. He says, in ratifying a strong new contract at Anheuser-Busch, Teamsters have clawed back concessions from earlier agreements, protected retirees, and invested in their pensions, and will be taking home the higher wages we have sought for. He goes on to say, this agreement provides the same high-quality health care for all rank-and-file Teamsters and protects every member's job. So cheers to the workers who stayed in the fight to win a contract that sets a new standard for everyone in the brewing industry. Sean O'Brien, General President of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the President of the American Federation of Teachers.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at USW.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com to learn more.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Ironworkers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You could find more at oh.aft.org. In fact, Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation, will be joining us on the show next Tuesday. Right now, we have the president of the American Federation of Teachers on our live line, and that would be Randy Weingarten. And it's only appropriate, too, because March is Women's History Month. And I'll tell you, on their homepage, there's a lot about women making some dramatic moves in labor, making history. That's what it's all about. Randy Weingarten, welcome back to America's Workforce. How are we doing today, my union sister?
We're good. I mean, look, you know, a day like yesterday where we organized another group of workers is always a really good day. And yesterday, Joe Biden cinched the nomination for the Democratic nomination for president. I understand that Donald Trump did as well. So, we got a rematch between, you know, the most union-friendly president of the United States that we've had, not only since FDR, but maybe ever.
Yeah.
And someone who wants to harm women with their policies and wants to take people, you know, who praises dictators and who wants to unwind the Constitution. So it's really, so you can see, you know, the stakes of the election in the next few months at the very same time as, you know, unions are viewed positively by 88% of young people because they understand what we do. So it is a very Dickinsonian moment in terms of policy and in terms of America. But it's one where if we do win in November, there is a chance because of the manufacturing work that the president has done. There's a chance in terms of all the work that Sherrod Brown has done that we could really see a renewal of Build It in America, Make It in America, and the American middle class come roaring back.
That's exactly what we want. Well, let's backtrack here a little bit. Congratulations on the organizing. And I read when the union density numbers came out that you organized, you being the AFT, organized 83 new units last year. And you just mentioned a new campaign. What happened yesterday? Can you give us some details on that?
We had 43 people who joined in one state as in the healthcare field. But even this year alone, even in 2024, we've had about 20 victories already of people wanting to be part of a union. We've had over between July 2022 and now, we've had about 124 wins. And we've never had this in our lives. And it's in education, and it's in healthcare, and it's in public services. And so what we're seeing is, look, we're organizing union, and we've understood that, you know, that when people want unions, you really need to find ways to stretch yourself and to organize. You know, like your lives depend on it, and it does. And when you, but we've also, you know, as you know from what's going on in Ohio, we're also making sure that there's a real connection with members who are already members. And we've done that, you know, not only since Janus, but it's become our, you know, just in our DNA. So yesterday we organized a library system in, you know, in the country. A couple of days ago, we've organized lab techs in Michigan. We've done several units of libraries in Ohio. We are in the midst of organizing a couple of universities. So it's in, you know, all the fields where people are making a difference in the lives of others, whether it's in education or healthcare or public services.
As far as what's going on in organizing, is a big part of this because of the attacks by many lawmakers? We know what's going on in Florida, and a lot of that's happening in Ohio. You know that. But because of those attacks, is that where people are saying, especially teachers, paraprofessionals, you represent so many people, nurses in the AFT, they're saying, you know what, we got to do better here. We got to organize. We got to expand our ranks. Is that what's happening right now, in your opinion, Randy?
Well, I think it's two things. I think it's both. Let me say it this way. I think the attacks really, matter. But more, what matters more is what you do about the attacks. Mm-hmm. Meaning, I think what people, what workers who are freshly organized see is they want power. They want power to change their lives. They see that, you know, rich billionaires have power. They see people like, you know, who criticize us or disparage us have power. The ones on Fox or the ones on Newsmax or, you know, but they want power to change their lives. To, you know, if you have a kid, to make sure you have some parental leave, that you don't have to immediately go back to work. You can bond, you know, with your newborn. They want to make sure that they get a raise, that they have family-sustaining wages, that in schools, and, you know, I'm so glad for the settlement that just happened in the Florida school situation on Don't Say Gay. A dear friend of mine was one of the lawyers. And could you imagine that they had to get to a settlement? And we're doing the same thing in a New Hampshire case that we have litigated. But the settlement simply says that gay-straight alliances are still allowed to be in schools in Florida. That if you are LGBTQ, you can actually say that. You don't have to hide. The fact that these had to be written down and made clear, and that was part of the settlement, it's remarkable. But that's what people are afraid of, that, oh my God, if I say something, even who I am, if I put a picture up, if I'm gay, of my wife, you know, and I'm a kindergarten teacher, or my husband, and I'm a kindergarten teacher. Am I going to be okay? Am I going to be fired? And so people want that, to be able to live freely. To borrow, you know, the line from the state of New Hampshire, they want to live freely. They want to be able to thrive. And so they see, I think, one side, basically undermining, insulting. Look, that's what Donald Trump does. That's what autocrats do. They insult, they create fear. And they see that what we're trying to do is not only fight back, but work to get better conditions so people can live a better life. It's both of those things.
That's what we want. Randy Weingarten joining us on our live line today. She is president of one powerful union, 1.7 million strong, the American Federation of Teachers. Do check out their national website, aft.org. You know, I looked at it before the interview and I saw you. I saw you at Cleveland's Public Hall, and I remember talking to Melissa Cropper about the Cleveland Reads program. So that's where that picture was taken, right?
Yes. I mean, so we've done two years in a row, we've participated in the Cleveland Reads program. And I love that the city of Cleveland has taken on reading to such an extent that there was a parade last year to announce the number of pages and hours that young people and their families have read. And, you know, if you really, in the terms of the country, if you want to take on reading, if you want to make sure, as the president said in the State of the Union, the kids are reading with proficiency by grade three, then you have to create not only the infrastructure that enables reading, you know, but you have to create a joy of reading. An environment right. of reading. And that's part of what the Cleveland Reads Program does. And the AFT, we're not there yet. It's going to happen this year. We're going to give out our 10th millionth book this year that the union, we work with publishers, we work with a group called First Book. But since, you know, over the last few years, we have been dedicated to helping create a generation of joyful and confident leaders. And this May, we will give out our 10th millionth book.
I love it. Randy, I got to take a quick break. Randy Weingarten joining us on our live line, president of the American Federation of Teachers. We'll continue with her later in the show. We're going to check in with a retired CEO who is not happy about the proposed merger of U.S. Steel and Nippon Steel out of Japan. He's going to talk all about it. We'll be back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Are you an experienced mechanical insulator looking to take your career to the next level? Insulators Local 50 in Central Ohio has steady work for a number of years. Insulators Local 50 offers a total wage and benefits package that can't be beat. It's not just the competitive wages. Local 50 also provides medical, vision, and dental insurance with no paycheck deductions for you and your family. Don't miss out on the chance to secure your future. Join us at Insulators Local 50. Earn great pay and the best benefits. Visit insulators50.com/AWF50 to fill out the online form, and a Local 50 representative will call to begin the process. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org. America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. And thank you for making America's Workforce the top labor show in America, top 1% of all podcasts in America. AWFpodcast.com is the website. By the way, this next segment brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office. Blue Cross and Blue Shield companies formed out of a need to provide affordable health care to teachers, to loggers, and miners. And back in 1965, the Blues developed the National Labor Office to strengthen its commitment to organized labor. Well, today, Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office remains focused on America's workers, advocating for affordable and equitable health care, partnering with strategic alliances to provide industry-leading products and services, and proudly serving more than 18 million unionized workers, retirees, and their families. Working hard for America's working families for the health of America. You can learn more by following them at Blue Labor on LinkedIn and X, formerly known as Twitter. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, AFT.org. You can also go to Facebook. It's facebook.com/AFT Union. Lots posted on the website. And if you go to the website, you'll see a lot about Women's History Month, which actually began as National Women's History Week back in 1980. When then-President Jimmy Carter issued a presidential proclamation that created it. So let's talk about Women's History Month here, Randy. And you, yourself, as part of that, you're making history because of what you're doing with the American Federation of Teachers. But let's talk about the struggles. And women are very dominant in the workforce. I think they outnumber men right now. And they've come back, too, especially we saw a lot of job loss, female job loss during the pandemic, and it seems to have been alleviated now. So how do you feel as far as women in the workforce and overcoming the obstacles? I mean, you've had many obstacles. You're still encountering obstacles as a female labor leader. How do you rate everything right now where women stand in the workforce, in your opinion?
Well, you know, women still are paid less than men in the workforce unless you have a union contract where, you know, embedded in that union contract is to be paid equally for the same work. You know, a union contract is one of the most important ways you combat discrimination. And we have to do it together. We have to do it as a, you know, as a group of people. And, you know, we do it in a way that where, you know, you have demands and you have wishes, you have passions, you have needs, and you try to make them a reality. So, you know, in a union contract is a way of, you know, creating races and a way of creating equality and a way of creating a way of having a group together that can fight for the conditions that women need. But I would say that what's happening right now is there is a real weird attempt to go backwards and an attack on women. And I know that you know, Governor Ivey, you know, worked very hard to try to change that IVF ruling in Alabama, but it was not unforeseeable that once Roe was overturned, that you'd have a ruling like that about IVF or metoprolol or other things. These rulings are really hurting and harming women and families. And even when, think about in the Congress right now, one of the senators from Mississippi is stopping the United States Senate from basically saying, no, we're passing a law that says IVF is fine. It should be allowed in every state in the nation. And she's stopping that from being passed. You could watch, so something weird is going on in terms of the some Republicans who are basically okay with harming women, with undermining them, with not letting them be in decision makers of our own reproductive health, of our own of an ability to decide whether to have a family and when. And it is, that's a very ominous path that the United States is on. And you've got, Trump, who takes credit for getting rid of Roe. So here you got somebody who years beforehand, said, oh, he's in favor of, of abortion and, donated to pro candidates who were in favor of abortion. But, because he wanted to be president, he changed his position, just like he's changing his position on TikTok and other kinds of things. And then at the same time as all this is going on, in the workforce, you got the first, and in the labor movement, you got the first president of the AFL-CIO who's female, Liz Shuler. You have a dynamic, wonderful president of the AFT in Ohio, Melissa Cropper. And you have, CEOs, increasing numbers of CEOs who are female. You have lots of different role models. You have the first female vice, African-American vice president in Kamala Harris. So there's, so you see role models that are out there who are, who are really, who are female, who are, not just shattering the glass ceiling, but who are doing great stuff for the American people. So it's a mix. It's right now, when you ask about the state of women, it's, again, just like Americans, because, women are Americans and are really, play a vital role in this country in so many ways. Mm-hmm. It's a very Dickinsonian moment.
You got to have a thick skin, and I'll tell you, that all too well. You've been called the most dangerous person, not just in America, but in the world. That was by Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State. Your message here, and I'm going to let you wrap it up. I know you're really busy here. There's a lot of people that listen to this show. I'm very proud of hosting this show for 26 years. The show's been actually airing since 1993.
Wow.
We're cranking it. We're really cranking it here. There's a lot of women right now that are thinking, I'd like to become the next Randy Weingarten. What would your message be to them, Randy? I mean, they got to prepare for almost the worst here, especially in the environment of today. What would your message be on that?
Well, I want them to become the next them. Whoever they want to be, that's what I want them to become. And my message is simply this. There's no country like America. And there's just the possibility that exists in America is huge. And we know there's lots of peril. And what happens with the things that I have labored so hard in my life to make better, a pathway to a middle class, through a burgeoning labor movement, through making sure that people can have access to collective bargaining, which is the single most important way that you raise wages and you change working conditions so that adults can thrive. The pathway to possibilities through education so that kids have that opportunity, and right now doing the work that we're doing to create real solutions to expand experiential learning in schools so kids actually are doing things and are creating things and want to go to school and can get things like certifications out of it and career tech ed or the reading that we just talked about and creating an environment of confident leaders, or really dealing with loneliness of kids and the aftermath of COVID. But my point is this: these kinds of things that I've worked on for my entire adult career, how we help create a better life for people so that people can thrive in America, so they have voice, they have agency. That's the American dream. And that's what I've tried to do for all this time. And it's pretty funny and ironic and sad to be attacked for wanting simply to help people help themselves. But that's what America is. That's what the labor movement is. That's what public education is. And what I would say to anyone is, just work together with others, create a community, and take an idea and try to make it real. That's the possibility of America.
And we'll leave it on that note. Randy, thank you so much for your time and your dedication and passion. Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers. Do check out their national website, aft.org. You stay safe, and please stay in touch with us, okay?
Thank you so much. Take care of yourself.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Bill Jones will be joining us. He's a retired CEO, and he's going to talk about the proposed merger of U.S. Steel and Nippon Steel. He does not like it, and he'll explain why coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
The Alliance for American Manufacturing is a nonprofit, nonpartisan partnership formed back in 2007 by some of America's leading manufacturers and the United Steelworkers. Their mission is simple: strengthen American manufacturing and create new private sector jobs through smart public policies. Key word there is smart. We need to be smarter than ever in today's highly competitive world. The Alliance for American Manufacturing believes that an innovative and growing manufacturing base is vital to America's economic and national security, as well as providing good jobs for future generations. Good jobs today, good jobs tomorrow. Good American jobs. Find out more at AmericanManufacturing.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craftworkers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go to line number two and welcome a new guest to the show. His name is Bill Jones. Now, Bill is a retired CEO, worked for a long time at Cummins American, a privately held company, and he had a lot of relationships with members of unions like Leo Gerard at the United Steelworkers Union, Metal Trades Unions, things like that. He's also a board member of a wonderful organization that's really going against all this craziness about free trade, and that would be the Coalition for a Prosperous America. Do check out their article, and that's basically why we're talking, because Bill put together an op-ed piece here about this merger, actually a buyout, by Nippon Steel, based in Tokyo, and the U.S. Steel Corporation. This was announced in December. Nippon, this is the fourth largest steel producer, and they made an offer to buy U.S. Steel, the third largest steel maker. So 4+1, I guess they want to become number one by doing this. Now, there's a lot of problems, and Bill kind of laid it out. Bill Jones, thanks for joining us here on America's Workforce. And the number one issue here is national security. And I want to, and that is a belief that is shared by many, including those in the unions, as well as a number of politicians, J.D. Vance and Sherrod Brown, just to name a few. But I'd like to get your take on this because, well, you come from a corporation that has navigated its way through this craziness of we call free trade. You're a survivor. You were a survivor when you retired at Cummins American. But paint a picture here of what can possibly happen to U.S. Steel, because you did a lot of homework on this. So, Bill Jones, it's all yours, buddy.
Ed, good afternoon. How are you today? Pleasure to be talking to you. And, yeah, I knew Leo Gerard very well. We fought many battles together. He was a great guy. I loved working with him, and we won a few. So, I've enjoyed working with the industrial unions over the years. They've been real advocates for domestic manufacturing, which, of course, I'm a big proponent of, having run a U.S. manufacturing firm successfully for many years. Starting, I think, as a reference, I'd encourage people to go to the Coalition for Prosperous American website and look at the article by Jeff Ferry, our in-house economist. He outlined some of the statistics about steel and why it's so important. I would say that steel is a core or essential industry, and that steel goes into so many different products in the United States or anywhere else in the world. And if you don't have a robust steel industry domestically, it's going to have a very severe and negative impact on U.S. manufacturing. A good example of how serious that problem can become is what happened to us with our chip manufacturing. We let all of our foundries shut down over the last 20 years so we can't produce enough of our own chips. We found out during the pandemic what a problem that is, so Congress passed a legislation to rebuild the foundries. We don't want to have that happen to the steel industry. That would be a really bad thing. So where is our steel industry today? It's actually quite robust. You can break it down into electric arc furnace type production and the blast furnace type production. Electric arc, of course, is the leader is Nucor. But you have four key manufacturers, Nucor, U.S. Steel, Cleveland Cliffs, Steel Dynamics, together make about 80 million tons of steel a year for the United States requirements. And it's interesting, the free traders would say, you end up for sale because you're not competitive, yada, yada. But the reality is the U.S. steel industry is extremely efficient and high-tech. And a good measure of that is you realize 40 years ago we made 80 million tons a year with five times as many employees. That's how much more productive steelmaking has become in the United States. We have one-fifth the number of people making the same amount of steel. And furthermore, U.S. steel production is the most advanced when it comes to clean production, you know, no pollution, mm-hmm. things like that. So, you know, it's a canard to say that it's not competitive and that's why U.S. steel is on the selling block. That's not the case at all. And I've seen this so many times, the Japanese and the Europeans, they will dump in the U.S. market while they have their own home protected market. So Nippon Steel, for instance, by having a protected home market, has that market to themselves, prices in a way so that they get a return on their invested capital, and then they can dump in the United States at less than their total cost, selling at their variable cost, which is their material and labor, until they drive out the U.S. competitors, and then buy the market share and then raise their prices after the U.S. manufacturers are gone. And if you look at some statistics, U.S. steel, I mean, Nippon Steel's current capacity production in Japan is 44 million tons a year. But their total capacity is 66 million tons. Thus, they have an excess capacity of 22 million tons. Now, U.S. steel's capacity in the United States is 20 million tons. Now, it doesn't take rocket science to understand what's happening here. It would be prudent for Nippon Steel, after buying the U.S. steel, to shut down many of the U.S.-based U.S. steel production facilities, move the production of that steel to Japan, to take up the excess capacity they have there and become even more profitable and more efficient. That's the end game here, and that's what they will do. Now, they will tell you they're going to keep all the employees. I've heard that before. I saw that in my industry. There used to be five manufacturers in my industry supplying 95% of U.S. requirements. Cummins is the only one that survived, and the Europeans and the Japanese bought all of my competitors, and they shut down all the U.S. production and moved it to their facilities in Europe or Japan. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, well, that won't happen. I'll give you an example. You realize the United Kingdom is a place where steel production was invented back in the 1800s. And over the last 30 years, the United Kingdom, their leaders, the U.S. and U.K. government leaders are unique in their belief in free trade. The Germans, the Japanese, the French, they don't believe in that. They're pragmatic people trying to build up world-class industrial manufacturing companies. Only the British and the Americans don't think that way. So part of free trade, all of the domestic steel manufacturers in Britain have been sold to foreign entities. And over the last 30 years, those entities have slowly shut down all of the mills in the United Kingdom. And you realize last week, Tata, an Indian company, who owns the last blast furnace mill in the UK, announced they're going to shut it down. So now the United Kingdom was without any ability to produce virgin steel within the UK. Now, from a national security standpoint, I submit to you that is insane. Because when there are conflicts, and they do happen in the world, if their supply chain is from India to get steel through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal, where the Houthis are blowing up boats right now, they might have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a supply chain that is that far away. So, you know, that would be my biggest concern is a national security interest. You also can have, even with your allies, a divergence in foreign policy. The other thing is once you set this precedent in the United States that foreign companies can buy our four remaining steel companies, we could end up like the UK, where all four, you know, Nucor, U.S. Steel, Cleveland-Cliffs, Steel Dynamics are all purchased by foreigners, and they do the same thing to our steel industry of what they did in the United Kingdom.
Oh,
where pretty soon we have little to no production in the United States of a core component that goes into almost every manufactured product. That's insane. But that could be the end game.
Bill, what's the answer here? I mean, we have to have a steel industry, and I understand the national security implications here. But to your point, I mean, if we shut down and become like the UK, what's going to happen to America? And how can this administration, how can our representatives fight back on this, Bill?
Well, first I would say to, you know, people in the government that are concerned, can you imagine if During the Second World War, prior to the war, 25 or 30% of our steel capacity, we were dependent upon Nippon Steel, right?
Right.
But what we need to do, and what I would do in the days gone by, I would pick up the phone right now and call my good friend Leo Girard, and I'd say, Leo, industry and labor, we need to get together on this issue. We need to saddle up and fight this battle. And we need to go see our friends. And who are our friends? You know what? Very pragmatic people that are not so much caught up in the ideal in both parties. You know, Senator Durbin we should go see, Marco Rubio, who's a Republican who's very good, Sherrod Brown, I've worked with him for years, he gets this stuff, Rick Scott out of Florida, J.D. Vance out of Ohio, Josh Hawley out of Missouri, Joe Manchin out of West Virginia, Fetterman out of Pennsylvania, and let them know they have the support of labor and industry to fight this. The other encouraging thing, you know, in words is, you know, President Biden has expressed concern about this. He's asked to have it looked at. That's encouraging. We should also try to arrange a meeting with the Biden administration. And you may have heard in the news last week that Trump, when he was meeting with the Teamsters Union, he announced that he would block the sale.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, blocking the sale is only the beginning. And what we need to say to the Biden administration and to Trump, whoever's going to be president next, you need to do more than just block the sale of U.S. steel to Nippon. Just like we made the mistake of letting the chips industry go down and we didn't have enough foundries, and now we're rushing to rebuild that important industry, we need to have legislation like chips for steel. So that the steelmakers see in the United States, the Big Four can see, okay, over the next decade, I see a way forward to make investments in plant, equipment, capital, labor, to remain a world-class leader because our government is behind us, not trying to destroy us. That's what we need to do. We need to get together, you know, Coalition for Prosperous America would be happy to talk. You know, I've been trying to reach the current leader of the Steelworkers Union. I don't have the relationships. I don't know the fellow. But, and we would love to work with labor on this and try in every way we can to support the people in the Senate, in the House that understand this and are on both sides. The good news, we have people in both parties that are very concerned about this. So I think we can win this battle if we work together.
There you go.
And I fought many battles with the unions in the past. When you get these bipartisan coalitions going between industry and labor and across party lines, I mean, it's a lot of fun. I mean, Leo and I work with Ted Kennedy and Tom Coburn and talk about two different people on some issues, and we just kick the fanny. We won big on some issues we had in the day. So I think that's what we ought to do is saddle up and go fight this battle. I mean, one thing about the industrial union leaders, most of them, they're real patriots, and they think strategically about national defense and the importance of a robust industry. And even my friends in Japan will tell me they want the United States to sustain our industry. We're their ally, you know, and the presence of U.S. Navy in Southeast Asia keeps the peace. You know, that's a nasty neighborhood before we showed up. You know, for 1,000 years, the Japanese and the Chinese and the Koreans and the Russians, they didn't get along very well.
No.
And the best way to keep the peace is for the United States to have a very robust industrial economy, because everybody knows you cannot be a military power unless you are a leading industrial power of the world. And historically, all the way back to the Romans, whoever was the industrial power was a military power. And the United States has brought peace to the sea lanes all over the world because of our U.S. Navy. But if we let our industry go, we can't build a robust Navy or sustain it. That's the reality. And our enemies will know that. The Chinese are looking to see if we're dumb enough to let our industry go. And if they see that happen, I guarantee you they'll become a lot more aggressive in the South China Sea, in the Straits of Taiwan, in the Singapore Straits, and try to control shipping. It'll be ugly. That's why this is so important.
To your point, Bill, we made a lot of mistakes over the years. We don't need to make another one. This is all posted on the Coalition for a Prosperous America website. Bill Jones is a board member, retired CEO of Cummins American, a privately held company. He's been through it all. He knows that free trade does not work. We got to protect our nation, and we got to save the steel industry. Bill, thank you so much for joining us here on America's Workforce.
And it's a pleasure. Thank you for giving me time to visit today. I really appreciate it.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Alliance for American Manufacturing and the author of making it in America. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.